Hello, this is CIA Files. I'm your host, Topher Ford. My co-host is Brandon Gibbons. Brandon, should I redo that?
I don't know. I think this might be the podcast you've been looking for.
Is it? Is this the podcast I'm looking for?
Not you, but the people.
Well, either way, it's what we got. So, how are things going? Where are you at right now?
I'm in Krakow. It's been pretty interesting. Well, I showed up and found the best use of my talents appears to be making IKEA furniture at one of the refugee centers. All right, that's cool. And we ran into a group, Team Krakow was one of the people we met with, and we worked at their warehouse for a day, and doing like foot warmers and stuff. So they got like 60,000 of them that they needed to repackage, but they were holding them here because it's warm now, of course. They said, well, if we send them now, they might get lost or put away in someone's back office to be sold, kind of, corruptly. So this is, we're going to hold them until it gets cooler and then send them, so they should have a better chance of going immediately to keep those little footsies and handsies warm in the winter. And let's see, there was another group, mission.uk.co, and they were delivering at the I call it Hope Hostel, but I think it has a different name. I'm volunteering here. I can't remember the freaking name of it. But I just show up and they give me IKEA furniture and I'm just like myself away. But a delivery showed up and we went downstairs to help with it. And it was some British people there was four people that bought up two vans. They bought up two vans and got a bunch of donations and just loaded it up. And they've done it at least once before, but one of their cars broke down and it was getting fixed. And we told them they could stay with us, so we've been sleeping in the van, and we got a pretty nice little Airbnb. And we was like, oh, well, okay, we'll help the calls come and get some showers and some good sleep in a cozy apartment. And then they were gone the next day. And but I think they're coming back through.
That reminds me a lot of the time I spent touring as in rock bands, and because that was a standard thing, like go to a town you've never been to and hope that there's somebody in the audience who thinks you're cool and offers you a place to stay, so you go sleep on their couch or on the floors and then wake up at 7 in the morning and leave a little note, thanks for the couch.
Yeah, so long and thanks for all the fish.
Yeah. So today we are following up on our profile on current CIA director William J. Burns. Last week we discussed, his background, his upbringing, education, the fact that he's like a legacy diplomat and government service worker. And we kind of went through his political career up until present day. And so today we're going to discuss his time served as the director of the CIA. And, it's interesting. This ties in a little bit. So one of the things we're going to discuss with Bill Burns is how he has been pretty open and forthcoming with intelligence. Especially we saw this in the lead up to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which we'll talk about more later. But he's been, compared to past CIA directors, he's been pretty transparent, for a CIA director.
Well, crazy. Yeah, I mean, I remember in the lead up to the invasion, one of the things that we talked about is like Biden was like telling what was going to happen beforehand. And like, oh, yeah, the Russians are about to do this. And like, no, as they do it, the Russians are about to do this. No, and then they, and then they were like, oh, that's brilliant because it tells us what the Russians know. Like, we know what you're doing. And then they got to get all paranoid. And
whereas usually it's just kind of a low key sort of, you know, they don't talk about it until it happens historically. But yeah, so it, in that spirit of openness, it seems like a couple of, past CIA and national security figures have also embraced that openness. So we've had two different former public officials come out and openly discuss, with no qualms, their roles in
election rigging.
Yes, God, my words, brain, words, please. I'd like to request words from you, brain, today.
Thank you. Have you filled out a form 98326?
No, and now that I know the name of that form, I can't remember what it was I was asking for. So thanks. No, all right, so. Basically, okay, we'll start with the first one. So we have this tweet from at Fiorella Isabel M. And this is in regards to former CIA director James Woolsey being on Laura Ingraham's show on Fox News. So she said, quote, former CIA director James Woolsey laughs when Laura Ingraham asks if the U.S. has, quote, tried to meddle in other countries' elections. And he says, oh, probably, but for the good of the system, to avoid communists from taking over. And then she asks him, do we do it now? And he responded, only for a good cause. So he's...
of course we do.
Right. Because the CIA has in the past, you know, like more recent times, has said that they don't do this anymore because it doesn't provide good results. It's not worth it. And also, oh, I guess it's kind of unethical. So they've said that they don't, that, you know, they stopped doing this, I guess, you know, pretty much after Reagan, they kind of took the stance of like, we don't, you know, we're not getting involved in other people's elections anymore, which I guess they weren't telling the truth. I could feign shock for sarcasm, but what's the point? It's
it is something that I am frustrated with, because it, in a sense, also adds a sort of legitimacy to the Russian claims that, oh, the whole Maidan protests were staged. And it's like, well, stage is a bit of a strong word, but you know, we may very well have been helping create controversy where there wasn't before. Having said that, maybe it was for a good cause.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that. Like the CIA helping facilitate, you know, mass protests. Like we talked about that with Hong Kong. With, you know, there have been lots of claims that the CIA played a hand in those protests. And I felt like if I lived in Hong Kong and I didn't want to be subject to Chinese policy, then I'd probably accept help from the CIA too, you know, because taking on the Chinese government would be pretty difficult as just a regular individual. So it's hard to say, but yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a whole lot of gray area with it, you know, like if we're supposed to promote freedom, democracy, you know, at what point are you being unethical? You know, like, oh, well, if we clandestinely donate to a democratic organization, is that, you know, is that unethical? But it's also why the Russians got rid of a lot of the non-government organizations, because they said they're really fronts for pro-Western groups, which may or may not have been true. But they also wanted to get rid of missionaries.
Right. Well, cause, you know, maybe their claims are true, and then maybe they're not, and they're just using it as an excuse to consolidate power. So, but they've got valid claims to work with to, you know, legitimize their other claims.
I would say, when you say valid, define valid as anywhere from a grain of salt to, okay, maybe it's true. But, yeah. I mean, I say it could be very exaggerated. Or it could, right. I mean, theoretically, it could be no interference at all. Or it could be something that, you know, come on, in all honesty, it's pretty innocuous. I think I remember seeing some Cuban fellow that did a blog, and he receives like $50,000 a year from the State Department or some group that's linked to the State Department, and, you know, the Cuban government's like, oh, you know, this is, you know, spycraft. And it's like, well, that's also supporting freedom of speech. I mean, you know, like, there's a difference in that and actually organizing riots.
Right. And it makes that,
and that seems to be the claim that the Russians were making, is like, oh, this was a staged rebellion, a staged coup. We all got along perfectly fine until the CIA came and did all this. It's like, yeah, I don't think that's exactly how it went down.
Well, there's this thing of, you know, the CIA has a history of sort of founding and funding propaganda outlets, but not keeping direct control of them, and then it backfires on them. Like, I think it was Radio Free Europe, or, you know, at least one of their anti-communist radio stations in Eastern Europe, where they, like, you know, they funded it, and, you know, they put people in there who were going to say anti-communist things, but then they didn't have direct control over what they were saying, and that came back to bite them in the ass later when the radio stations were, like, pushing for a more hardline revolutionary stance, and the CIA was like, whoa, now's maybe not the time for that, and they're like, you know. So
the check cleared. We're talking.
I mean, and well, in a more general sense, the CIA has a long history of, you know, enabling and empowering resistance, only to, like, you know, resistance groups only to, like, completely lose control of them later, and have, or not even have control of them in general, and then have them, you know,
backfire
later. Right? Yeah.
It's
kind of a pattern. So, yeah. So anyway, that was, you know, former CIA director James Woolsey. And then after him, we had our good friend, former Trump national security advisor, John Bolton. He was saying that Trump didn't construct a meticulous plan to overthrow the 2020 election. He was talking with Jake Tapper. He backed up the veracity of his judgment on Trump by admitting that he had been involved with government coups before, and Trump's just not smart enough to plan one. So this is what Bolton said, quote, "That's not the way Donald Trump does things. It's rambling from one half-assed idea to another. One plan that falls through and another comes up. That's what he was doing. As I say, none of it is defensible, but you have to understand the nature of what the problem of Donald Trump is." Then Tapper responded by saying, "One doesn't have to be brilliant to attempt a coup." Bolton responded, quote, "I disagree with that. As someone who has helped plan coup d'etat, not here, but other places, it takes a lot of work. And that's not what he did. It was just stumbling around from one idea to another." So, you know, I thought that was pretty interesting. Yeah. He's Bolton. Like, I've planned coups. he's not smart enough to plan a coup. When Tapper asked him, you know, like, oh, so what coups are you talking about? He mentioned Venezuela as a success.
Oh, yeah, that's really worked out well recently. That one really stuck.
So I was trying to remember, like, what all went on with Venezuela.
Yeah, well, Venezuela had that whole thing in the past with, being like right-wing military types that the U.S. likes. But it's kind of weird for him to bring it up as a success because, like, the 1958 coup was like to keep, it was like there was a kind of a military dictator that the U.S. liked, and there were elections and he didn't win, but then he kind of tried to do a coup to stay in place, but there was a coup that was successful to make sure he stayed and gone, or to get rid of him, and he fled, and the U.S. is like, oh, but we like him. And Nixon went to visit. He was vice president. It was like 58, and then like he would visit in 59. It may have been 58. I think 59. And he and his entourage were attacked. And I don't know exactly how true it is. It's probably an exaggeration, but they felt like people were spitting on his car, and they had to turn the windshield wipers off. turn the windshield wipers to clean it. Yeah. three guards were hurt. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's just kind of bizarre to say that would be a successful coup, because, one, there's you don't really know that the U.S. was involved in it, and it would have been a coup against the people the U.S. was getting, the team the U.S. was supporting. But Bolton does say, he would have been very young then.
Right, so he would have been involved in that one.
Yeah. But I think in the interview, he goes on to say, well, he was referring to the 2019 coup to remove Maduro, which did not work. And at the time, he said that wasn't a coup. Like back in 2019, he was like, this wasn't a coup. Which, I mean, okay, yeah, he could say it's clearly not a coup, but really, you know, I mean, that's what he would do, is he would lie, because that's kind of part of his job, is to pretend, right. You know,
and also, Lavrov,
we did not invade Ukraine.
There's a lot of crossover between, like, the way, say, a corporate executive works and a high up official in the federal government works, where whenever they refer back to something that happened that they did in the past, they're always going to spin it to the, oh, well, you know, it was pretty good. It worked out pretty well, no matter how it actually worked out.
Yeah. It's like, he seems to be full of it. Either way, like, he wasn't involved in any successful coups, unless there's coups that we don't know about, which I guess is that question, but...
Right, he may have been, when Tapper asked him, like, what coups are you talking about, he may have been like, oh, crap, I can't mention those. Venezuela! I think that went well. Yeah. Well, we'll circle back around to that. I felt like it was important. I really wanted to discuss both of those people being so open on, you know, the 24-hour news channels.
Bolton, he's always been pretty open about his ends justifying the means. And one of the things that really surprised me is, like, when he went against Trump over the whole Ukraine shenanigans, you're like, oh, well, it sure would be nice if you investigated, you know, Hunter Biden. And, you know, we got this money coming your way. And if you guys aren't investigating corruption, well, you know, I don't know if that money's going to make it on time. I'm sure it will, but it sure would be nice. And Bolton came out and was like, this is making our international relations partisan. And he's like super Republican, and
right, that's true. But he was also our ambassador to the United Nations for a while. So I'm assuming that gave him, you know, a lot of insight into the importance of maintaining those relations, you know, while Trump was in office, attacking all of those relations, you know, attacking NATO, attacking the European Union. So I'm assuming it you know, it has something to do with there that Bolton has a lot of ties to those leaders.
Perhaps. I think that maybe he's an example, like in his heart of hearts, even though I think he's a warmonger, he really does believe he's doing the right thing.
That he's a true believer, yeah.
Yeah, and
I can't help but wonder if he wouldn't have fit in really well in the 1950s and, you know, post-World War II CIA.
I'm sure he would have, especially with that mustache.
Yeah. Yeah, so, all right, anyway, moving on to Bill Burns. We're going to get back into him and cover his career as the CIA director to date. When we last left off, Burns had retired from government service and had taken a position with the think tank on international affairs. So Bill Burns was appointed to the Director of Central Intelligence in 2021 by President Joe Biden. What's interesting is Burns was supposedly Biden's third choice for the job. His first choice was rumored to be longtime CIA analyst and former deputy director Michael Morell. Morell is interesting. Actually, I say Morell is interesting. What I mean to say is Morell is kind of boring in CIA terms. He was a CIA analyst for years. He served as a deputy director from 2010 to 2013. And he was acting director in 2011 and then again for part of 2012 to 2013. He briefed George W. Bush on the September 11th attacks. Apparently, he spent the entire day with W, you know, giving him analysis on intelligence. And he told the president that he was certain that bin Laden and Al-Qaeda were responsible for the attacks. You know, he played a role in the whole intelligence on Saddam Hussein's supposed possession of weapons of mass destruction, which we all know that didn't turn out quite how they hoped. Well, I guess I say that, but you could argue that it turned out how they hoped, and they got to invade Iraq and they got rid of Saddam Hussein. But, you know, either way,
we got to do the thing we wanted to do.
Yeah. In 2015, he did write an apology in his memoirs to General Colin Powell for the CIA's report on Iran's weapons of mass destruction. And this was because Colin Powell, who was Secretary of State, he was tasked with taking this information on Saddam Hussein's possession of WMDs to the United Nations to present, you know, America's case for invading Iraq. And, you know, he said afterward he was pretty unhappy about that, which is understandable. You were sent to the United Nations with a bunch of bullshit and you had to sell it. And he was like, no one ever apologized to me for that. So Morell apologized in his book anyway in 2015. So Biden was reportedly considering appointing Morell to the CIA director until some politicians pointed out that Morell had supported torture during interrogations. He was a big apologist for torture or quote unquote enhanced interrogations. He had also played a part in the cover up of destroyed tapes that showed CIA officers torturing prisoners. That's something we're going to discuss at some point down the road. And this was Trump's first CIA director, Gina Haspel. I'm sorry, she was the second one. Trump's second CIA director, there we go, Gina Haspel, was also very much involved in, you know, that issue of the torture at CIA black sites of prisoners there, and they had taped the torture sessions. But then when people had a problem with the fact that those torture sessions happened, she helped destroy these tapes, supposedly, or played a role in the cover-up. Morrell also, he's been criticized because he defended the drone programs under George W. Bush and President Obama, which, you know, George W. Bush used drone warfare, and then Obama ramped the drone program up. Of course, you know, people might point out that under Trump, the drone program went way up. So anyway,
keeping soldiers safe.
So it, you know, that was Morrell's name was being brought up, although I don't think he was ever formally offered the job. He was just, you know, people who would have been in a position to confirm him, including some Democrats, were like, he's a non-starter. It's not going to fly. So then Trump offered the role to a man named Tom Donilon. Now, Donilon served as the national security advisor to President Obama from 2010 to 2013. Before that, he served in the Carter and Clinton administrations. He was Secretary of State for a minute. He also advised Obama's Commission on Enhancing Cybersecurity. And this is the part I find most interesting. He is currently the chair of BlackRock Investment Institute, which is the largest investment firm in the world, managing over $10 trillion in assets globally. They manage more money than almost every government, every nation on the planet, except for China and the United States. So, yeah, they kind of sort of own everything, like everything.
I think one of their real estate investment trusts owns a lot of housing.
Certainly.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, like when you had the housing bust, and I mean, we're all becoming first. You got to pay to the landlords. You know, a couple of people own everything. But instead of it being one particular lord with an obligation to someone higher and some sort of hierarchy, not that it's necessarily a good thing, it's, you know, faceless corporations. And, you know, when you get a board room together, there's this thing called diffusion of responsibility. You know, right. The bystander effect takes place. So you can do horrible, horrible things by committee.
Right. Especially when they say that they answer to the shareholders, and the shareholders becomes a label, not for, you know, a group of people, but like this faceless, massive, singular entity that constantly demands more and more, you know,
profit at all costs is what it comes down to. And it's, I really think that, yeah.
And they're legally obligated to, because if they make decisions that might be morally sound and ethical, but they are not in the best interests of the profit margin, then those executives who made those business decisions will get kicked out and sued. I don't want to, I'm not smart enough to like make a real articulated critique of capitalism and shareholder capitalism, but from what I understand of it, it's all bad. I don't.
Well, know. I'll give a disclosure. I do own a couple of shares of from this company's ETF. They're down right now, so if that makes you feel better.
I mean, even Karl Marx owned stocks, so I mean, the only reason I don't have any is because I don't have a lot of money and I don't know what I'm doing. So I just put some money in the savings and then spend the rest on crap I don't need. Because I'm an American, damn it. I'm
gonna. I got to keep that economy going. If you stop spending money on things you don't need, then people are like, man, they go out of business. You know.
Yeah.
People aren't buying.
So here's some more interest. Like when you talk about conspiracy theories, you know, like groups that control the world. Now, I'm not saying that BlackRock like controls the world. It's more of a matter of influence. You know, like they have a certain level of influence over things. Three former BlackRock executives currently work in Biden's cabinet as economic advisors. If that tells you anything. And then here's, I think, the most telling thing about BlackRock and Donilon and the CIA. Donilon declined Biden's job office. Donilon declined Biden's job offer, saying he preferred to stay in the private sector. He said he wasn't ready to return to government work. So I get the feeling that as you know, the chair, the lead executive of BlackRock, maybe he has more pull globally than he would as director of Central Intelligence. I'm pretty sure that him taking the job as director would be a demotion for him.
He'd certainly, salary wise, absolutely.
Yeah. Not that I'm sure at this point Donilon doesn't have to worry about salary, but I mean demotion in terms of salary and bonuses and whatnot, but also in terms of influence.
Oh yeah. The budget was probably bigger with his BlackRock.
Yeah. So he declined the job offer, and so we get to our friend William Burns. One thing that's noteworthy about his appointment enjoyed full bipartisan support, which, you know, is quite a feat in today's political climate. The Republican Party generally seems to oppose every single appointment by a Democrat just on general principle. But Burns breezed through his appointment process. He was praised by people on both sides of the aisle. That went well for him. And of course, he inherited Trump's CIA from, you know, that was run first by Mike Pompeo and then by Gina Haspel. Don't know too much about Gina Haspel, but Pompeo is, you know, he's a pretty divisive figure. He's always got a lot to say, and he's, you know, Pompeo's the one who floated the plans to try to kidnap Julian Assange, if that gives you any indication. Yeah, and he, you know, of course he moved from CIA director to Secretary of State, I believe. And he's the one that, like, right as, you know, the Trump administration was leaving, he went, oh, by the way, the United States recognizes Taiwan as a sovereign state. Bye.
Let me kick this forward into Nelson and go.
Yeah. Bill Burns was highly critical of the Trump administration's diplomacy. Here, this is a little bit from an NPR article. Quote, in 2019, Burns wrote a scathing critique of what he called the Trump administration's, quote, diplomatic malpractice, saying it had badly mistreated Marie Yovanovitch, the U.S. ambassador in Ukraine, whose removal from her post became a central topic in the president's impeachment and Senate trial. He wrote, quote, I've never seen an attack on diplomacy as damaging to both the State Department as an institution and our international influence as the one now underway. So, and that tracks, you know, Trump was not... he wasn't a great diplomat. You know, if you recall, he spent a lot of time criticizing the leaders of our allied countries while cozying up to dictators, are, you know, countries that we consider enemies. And so I think it's pretty natural that Bill Burns was gonna be critical of that, because that's very, he's very much the opposite of that, being a career diplomat.
Oh, and playing nice with the enemy didn't accomplish anything. Arguably, it made us look like weak pushovers, which
right.
kind of fascinates me, because it's like, aren't these guys supposed to be the really tough ones? And you know, that side of the aisle are supposed to be, right. you know, the, yeah. the war hawks. And like, it was kind of a bizarre take on things, or a bizarre approach.
You mean by like, the Trump administration?
Yeah. Like, I can understand offering an olive branch. I can understand trying, like, you know, hey, let's, maybe we, I wasn't president back during the last coup attempt on your right. nation. So maybe, you know, mistakes.
But that's perhaps, not really what he did.
Perhaps mistakes have been made. And like, right. yeah, right. It's not even, that's one thing. I could understand approaching things like that. But yeah, he was kind of like, I kind of like how you get those people to march out in front of you. That's cool.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, his approach was like, I really like the way everybody seems to be scared shitless of this guy. That's really cool. Kim Jong-un's got a pretty good racket going on here. Yeah, so Burns seemed to kind of try to take the opposite approach that from the Trump administration in dealing with foreign leaders. And really put to use his skills as a diplomat and an ambassador, something that he's been doing that we mentioned briefly last time, but as CIA director, something he's been doing that's a little unorthodox for that person in that position, is he's been visiting and meeting face-to-face with the leaders of different foreign nations. He met with South Korean President Moon Jae-in in October 21. That meeting seemed to be a sort of friendly, let's touch base affair, with Burns expressing respect for Moon's efforts to handle South Korea's conflict with North Korea. And I didn't see a lot that was, you know, really exciting or sexy about the meeting. You know, other than just the fact that it occurred, which is a little rare. Burns also met with the Taliban leader Abdul Ghani Baradar during the U.S. withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan in 2021. So he was in the mix there, which that seems kind of obvious, you know, that he would be heavily involved in withdrawal of troops there. So neither the White House nor the Taliban would comment on the meeting of the two, but it's likely they discussed the Taliban's stance on some key policies going forward, and also to just sort of keep their relationship smooth as the United States withdrew the troops. Because if you remember, you know, like ISIS tried to attack the airports and everything, and basically tried to stir the pot, so to speak, during that withdrawal. And both governments, the United States government and the Taliban, were both quick to go like, okay, no, that's not us, and we're not starting fighting again over this. That's some rabble rousers trying to start some shit. He's also been involved with our relationship with Saudi Arabia. President Biden took a hardline stance on Saudi Arabia, promising that if he was elected, he would make them a pariah state and he would end support for the Saudis in their war in Yemen. Since then, Biden seems to have tried to walk back some of that rhetoric, especially considering how gas prices and the gas supply has been affected by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So since then, he's been trying to, you know, get the Saudis to help relieve some of that pressure. And of course, Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudi prince, has been like, oh, so now you want to talk. Now you want to be buddies. Now you want to work something out. So yeah, Biden's walked back some of that rhetoric, trying to work with the Saudis to alleviate the rising fuel prices in the wake of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And the U.S. has even sent Saudi Arabia Patriot missile interceptors last March. So Burns met with Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman last April, although what was discussed is still unknown. Last May, and we reported on this in our news episodes, Burns traveled to Brazil to meet with President Jair Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro, we'll just stick with that, where Burns reportedly warned the president not to attack or undermine the integrity of Brazil's upcoming elections. Bolsonaro is currently seeing poor approval ratings from Brazilian voters, and he's responded to that by following Donald Trump's example and making a lot of declarations that the election will likely be stolen by his opponent. So he's been doing that same thing of laying groundwork to delegitimize the elections in the event that he loses. And so Burns reportedly traveled there.
I wonder where he could have gotten an idea like that.
Yeah, it's Donald Trump.
Oh, okay.
No, I know you're being sarcastic, but I don't have the patience for that anymore. Not for you. I'm not out of patience with you, but just a general. Anyway, as far as Burns' attitude going forward, when he was appointed director, he stated that China is his top priority. He framed the conflict with China as one over economic power and technological domination. Burns has been quite vocal about China's intentions to take Taiwan by military force in the near future. He says China has been closely watching the global response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and they're going to use the lessons that they learned from that in order to plan their invasion of Taiwan while trying to avoid a lot of the economic consequences that Russia has suffered through sanctions and lost business. So he's saying, and this makes sense, it tracks, that China has been watching how the world reacted to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the nuts and bolts, I would say, of the sanctions and all the economic consequences that Russia has been dealing with, and then working to sort of bolster themselves against, dealing with the same damage. And his stance on China is pretty in line with China seems to be another sort of bipartisan issue here in the States, although, you know, the Republicans, I think, you know, have been saying that Biden's too easy or he's inadvertently helping China with his, you know, what they would call bumbling policies and whatnot. But
yeah, he should be going and talking to Xi about how great he is and how bright it is that he's like having Instagram. Well, like not Instagram, but like their live streamers in China are like disappearing, not necessarily in prison, but being removed from the air for hurting the feelings of the Chinese people.
Yeah,
so
that's interesting. I was thinking about, like, because you've said in the past that many Chinese people are very sensitive about any perceived attacks on Chinese culture. And I thought about that as I saw a video about a Chinese MMA fighter who was, he became well known for fighting against so-called kung fu masters. That guy. And he would get in the ring and fight with, self-proclaimed kung fu. Now, during his 2020 campaign, kung fu garb, and took all of the sort of kung fu stances that you might see in movies, and he would just immediately destroy them using standard MMA fighting techniques with judo and boxing and everything. And I think he said he was trying to, expose these people as, they're not good fighters. They say they're good fighters, but they're not. And he was viciously attacked in, in the public eye for, attacking Chinese culture. Because...
Yeah, well, I think it was a lot of the ones he was fighting, or the ones I've seen, it's mostly been Tai Chi fighters. And, Tai Chi is... more about the energy. And it's like, I can use my energy to defeat you.
That's like...
And it doesn't work very well.
Is that like homeopathic version of kung fu?
Yeah. It's
well, because when I think of Tai Chi, I don't think of fighting. I think of it as like a meditative practice similar to yoga or something.
Right. And I think as far as that goes, it might be quite helpful, or, it's a good thing, nice on your joints.
Right. It seems, I've never really practiced Tai Chi, maybe once or twice I've tried, I don't know, but yeah, it seems like it could be very good for meditative stuff, but I couldn't,
nice exercise, flexibility, but yeah, you're not going to. Hey, fight off of anybody.
You're not going to get in a ring with MMA fighter and yoga or, energy flow your way out of the fight.
Bushido. Some kind of Facebook group, dojo life, and Bushido. Oh. Or it makes fun of stuff like that.
That's clever. I like that. Yeah, so anyway, he's taken a pretty hard stance against China and their expansion. Although it sounds like, we've discussed this. I've asked you lots of times, what is it that Western people, Western leaders are so afraid of when it comes to China? And we've talked about how China is expanding its territorial reach, taking over small islands in the Pacific, even building artificial islands, to make small military outposts or fishing grounds. And that's understandable. I mean, it makes sense that they would be worried about that sort of stuff from a global power perspective. But I still wonder, when we have people like Bill Burns and other American political leaders coming out and saying, trying to convince the American public that China is a threat. And I still wonder, and this is purely from a selfish perspective, but as an American citizen who doesn't travel, I've never left the country. I'd like to, but... I'm just like a middle class person in America living a middle class life. I work my day job. I do my hobbies. How is China's, expansion going to affect me? How is it going to affect the, why should your everyday American be concerned with China?
How did Russia's expansion into Ukraine affect you?
The gas prices went up.
And if the Straits of Taiwan become a war zone, and I mean, you got all those people in Taiwan that live in a democratic system, and if they're fighting against a kind of authoritarian system. So it just really, it matters. I guess it's about values. So
yeah, which, I mean, I understand it. I'm not trying to discount the, you know, the importance of those values. But yeah, they pose it as an existential threat to the American way of life almost. And I guess I'm still just not seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, that might be a bit much, but it's still the same. Like if, I mean, Russia conquered Ukraine and wouldn't really be a threat to the existence of the U.S., but that doesn't mean it's not something the U.S. should be involved in. And the same thing, if China forced Taiwan into the People's Republic government structure, it wouldn't be the end of the United States or Japan, for that matter. Theoretically, it could even lead to a more peaceful world if that's kind of the end of those territorial ambitions. But, you know, you've got an island of people that have spent two or three generations now as essentially a democracy. And, you know, maybe one and a half, because they did have a military dictatorship for a while, but, you know, it's... I mean, we're supposed to say we're all modern and value individual rights. And either we do or we don't. Right.
You know? And I see that. I totally understand that. And as a self-professed non-expert, the potential of China invading and overtaking Taiwan strikes me as bad, you know. I don't think that they should do it from a moral standpoint. Obviously, they disagree with me, and they. I still haven't gotten an email with like a questionnaire from China asking me my opinion on it. So
maybe what is Topher M. Ford? Lord,
Topher M. Ford, the government of China, really values your ideas and opinions. We'd like you to complete this one question survey for us.
Sure. Could you download this app?
Oh yeah.
We want you to download this app and then send it to your friends.
Right. Yeah. So, okay, I get that. And also I get, you know, there are some ramifications. Taiwan is currently, although the other places are trying to catch up, including the United States, but Taiwan, you know, currently is the world's largest producer of microchips, which are in a short supply lately, from what I understand. That's been, you know, when we talk about supply line issues, supply chain issues.
Oh no, my video game consoles are going to get more expensive.
Well, you know, it's what, you know, a weird byproduct of the microchip shortage that I've noticed is in the new car market. New vehicles, all new vehicles rely heavily on microchips, and they can't produce more. And we've, like, my wife recently went shopping for a new car. We went to a few dealerships, and including the local Toyota dealership here, and their lot was so sparse. And I was surprised, and it was like, where are all the cars? And then I did a little reading. I was like, oh, they can't keep up with demand, and the, you know, they can't manufacture enough cars because of the microchip shortage. As a result, car prices in general have gone way up. Used car prices are outrageous right now. So, you know, I guess in that way, that's an effect. I mean, that's not caused by China at the moment, but it would be interesting to know what China would do, how they would leverage that power if they took Taiwan and took over control of their microchip manufacturing. So, I mean, that's just one element that popped into my head.
Mm. Well, I guess we got to start manufacturing back home.
Well, we actually, we talked about this in the news. They are currently in Texas. I can't remember which companies, but they are working on building what will be a larger microchip manufacturing plant here in the United States. So,
oh man, but when they do Texas, then the microchips will be there.
That's right. Texas is gonna secede.
No.
Yeah. So,
and Elon Musk will be declared king.
And I picture Elon Musk as king there, and Ted Cruz as his like sniveling sidekick, like that the wormy guy in Lord of the Rings, who was, do you remember that guy? I can't remember his name, but he was like all weaselly and his hair was greasy, and he was the advisor to the king, and the king was generally good, but he had this painfully obvious villain as his advisor. That'll be Ted Cruz to Elon Musk, and Elon Musk won't be basically good. He will be basically terrible. Anyway, we're not getting into the speculative fiction realm just yet. All right, so one more thing we were going to touch on, and we kind of mentioned this earlier as far as Bill Burns' approach, and that was how he dealt with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. You know, in the time before Russia's invasion, he voiced warnings that Russia was building up for that invasion. A lot of other people around the world leaders and politicians were like, oh, you're being reactionary. We don't think Putin wouldn't actually invade Ukraine again. Of course, Russia kept saying over and over again, no, we're not invading. It's like I mentioned from Civ 5, when you have a buildup of your troops by another civilization's borders, they'll say, hey, your troops are making my people kind of nervous. What are you doing? And then you have to respond either, you're right to worry, it's war, or, oh, don't worry, our troops are merely passing through the area. And then if you say that and then later invade, then your credibility among the other civilizations in the game is hurt. But yeah, that's pretty much what Putin did. Oh no, our troops are merely passing through the area. And Bill Burns kept telling, you know, he would say this and told President Biden, who echoed it, no, Russia is going to invade, and they're going to do it very soon, and it's going to be massive. And as opposed to, you know, like, I guess you'd say the standard approach to this in the past, they backed up their claims by releasing raw intelligence as soon as they got it, including aerial satellite photographs of the Russian troops being built up, and, you know, other just raw intelligence that they would get.
What I'm getting is you're telling me that the guy that the intel analyst that accurately predicted the invasion of Ukraine is now telling us that China plans to invade Taiwan.
Yes, that is what is happening. That is a correct assessment of most recent.
That is the synopsis.
Yes.
The cliff notes. That is the cliff notes.
Yes. So, you know, there, I think one of the things that Bill Burns is trying to do as CIA director is to do what he can to fight this disinformation war that we've got going on. He even, you know, like, there's been lots of rumors flying around that Putin is sick, that he has cancer or Parkinson's disease, you know. And Bill Burns has even come out and said, like, hey, we, as far as the CIA is concerned, we don't have any information that that's true. So even in stuff that you would normally, like, claims like that you would normally attribute to the CIA fabricating to help their case. And he came out and squashed it, you know.
Yeah, and that was pretty interesting, too, because, it's like, well, maybe it was actually the FSB that was, spreading it out. Because the logic behind that, I fell for it. I thought Putin was ill. But the logic behind presenting him as being quite ill is then the West can say, oh, let's not really help. Let's wait. Let's wait it out. You know, he'll be dead. He'll be dead soon anyway. There's no real need to act. And it's really quite brilliant tactic.
Yeah. But it also, you know, it sounds very much like something that the CIA of the 60s would have done, you know.
Yeah.
Because we talked about that with the episode on the CIA Manual of Trickery and Deception, how they wanted to undermine Castro by, you know, dosing him with acid while he was on the radio or making his hair fall out. You know, doing all kinds of silly things.
Pranking. Pranking.
Yeah. That reminds me. I'm rewatching the Venture Brothers, if you ever watched that cartoon. And there is one of the characters was Baron von Underbite. He's kind of a Dr. Doom sort of figure. And he's like the dictator of a small Latvian style country, and you see they have an underground resistance that's fighting him, but they're only doing it by pranking him, putting cat hair in his water glass. One of their agents was executed because he was caught putting the Baron's hand in warm water while he was asleep. So I don't know. Yeah, it very much sounds, you know, like that's very, the CIA in the 60s with Fidel Castro was not too far away from that. So, let's put some powder in his boots that makes his beard fall out. You know, I feel like they would be one step away from, like, the TikTok pranks you see, like, we'll have somebody sneak in and cover his entire kitchen in aluminum foil. That'll make him angry. So, but yeah, that's kind of, that's Bill Burns up to now. Like, you know, we have to, time will tell if he is an effective CIA director. I will say that as far as what we can see, and of course, you know, getting real-time information on the CIA is difficult. They're kind of tight-lipped about that for the most part, but so far I feel like he is not a bad CIA director, both in terms of managing the CIA and in terms of being a decent human and not a scum pile.
That's a hard thing to balance.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
I don't know if those two things are actually possible. We gotta wait for.
Well, that's why I say we'll wait. We can't. We don't know yet. And I have not. I have very little information on like what the actual CIA is up to right now. You know, like I said, they don't generally report that stuff. There's usually a lag of a few years before you get to know, you know, what was happening. But so far, his MO seems to be diplomatic relations, seeing if they can work things out without having to do too much spy versus spy stuff. I mean, I'm sure that stuff is still there. That's never going to just go away. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm very curious so far. Yeah, so that's the episode for the week. Be sure to, you know, like I said before, check out our socials, Twitter at CIA Files Podcast, Instagram at CIA Files, Facebook.com/CIA Files. And said it before, but those ratings are a big help. If you're a new listener, you know, hit the subscribe button. I hate saying that because it's so cliche, but you know, it's a big help. If
you're the reviews.
Yes.
We really need reviews.
The reviews are a big thing. If you like the show and you enjoy expressing your opinion out loud, you can write us a review on your podcasting app if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever. You can also go to our website, CIAfiles.net, where you can leave us a voice message, which we will listen to and maybe even play on the show. Who knows? Anything's possible. Yeah. Brandon, do you have anything else?
Yeah. If you guys are interested in our adventures in Krakow, right now you can visit my wife's blog at devidyal.com, devidyal.com. And she will be hosting as well on Rise of Mammon.
Yeah, that's right. She's going to join us on there, help us work through some of that shenanigans. Keep a lookout for that on coming in September. And I'm also, you know, like having a little fun over on Twitter. I'm not super active on Twitter because it is not good for my mental health, especially for that Twitter account. I'm following a lot of hard right religious figures and hard right politicians, and some of the stuff they say makes me a little antsy. But if you can follow us, you can hit me up there on Twitter at Rise of Mammon, to sort of get where you can get all the updates on the show. And yeah, I guess I've rambled on enough, and we'll go ahead and wrap things up. You guys have a great week. Keep your bellies full and your heads on a swivel, and we'll be back next week.
All righty. Well, you guys have a good day.